Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 341. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my returning co-host here, Mike. Mike, how was international business?
So there's some things going on in my company right now. We actually got bought this year, and part of that buying might mean less European management and more local management within the US.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short, it's going pretty good, and everybody can't stop talking about how they're very excited for that part of it.
Have I ever explained that joke to you before?
No, maybe, but tell me again.
So you've seen How I Met Your Mother, right?
Yes. Yep.
There's an episode where they go to the airport to pick up chicks.
Oh, yes.
And Barney insists that they're international businessmen.
Yeah, he's like,
so then whenever I refer to you being gone from the show, I just refer to you as being on international business.
I forgot they did that. Oh, my God. It's amazing. I mean, it pretty much is what I mean, I'm usually on business trips, and it usually involves someone from Europe. So it technically is international. Wow. I just didn't get the reference. I watched that show so long ago, but now I remember the episode.
By the way, we have
an interview. Yep. An international business partner. No.
Actually. He's from Canada.
Yeah, okay. So today's an international episode, everybody. Jerome Gagnon will be on the show today. So looking forward to that. Gonna talk about some holiday spirits. I know we talked about that before. A horror anthology that I personally really enjoyed. Love horror anthologies. So
coming to a comic shop near you.
Yeah. As this episode comes out, it'll be the day after Halloween, but today's the spooky weekend. So I've been trying to watch some spooky stuff. I don't know if you've been watching any spooky stuff.
I mean the Fox NFL robot's a zombie right now, so does that count?
So there you go. Yeah, that counts. Yeah. Perfect. That's exactly what I was talking about, Chris. I did start the morning watching Evil Dead 2, so you know that's how you start every morning. I did finish. I don't know if you're interested in the Mike Flanagan shows at all. I don't know if we talked about this, but
I've heard of it.
The Fall of the House of Usher.
I've been hearing about this, but no, I don't think I'm interested.
So if you're an Edgar Allan Poe fan, huge thing there, but. Overall, I mean, I'll watch all his shows because he's a great horror writer. So he did like The Haunting of Bly Manor, Hill House, very solid show. And then I finished the, I don't know if you were watching this, Chris, The Continental, the John Wick spinoff.
No, because I got to get through the movies first. Then I would.
Okay, which did you finish on John Wick 2?
John Wick 1.
Okay.
Because as I was watching John Wick on Peacock, mm-hmm. This little indie movie that I love called Back to the Future came, so I've been watching that.
Okay, that's acceptable though. So be prepared though. The Continental is like three movies. It's a three-part miniseries, and they're all like an hour to 30, an hour to 40 minutes long.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was looking through it.
And it's like the origin story of Winston, who owns the hotel. Really cool. Some really interesting characters that they bring in. And Mel Gibson, I had no idea he was the villain, was really good. Very strange, but yeah, he's just a little over the top with like a New York accent. It's pretty great.
Dude, speaking of controversial actors,
uh-huh.
I know there's a lot of issues around Jonathan Majors and what may or may not have happened with this woman.
Yeah, kind of like that. You don't really hear much about that anymore.
Yeah, and I still don't know the whole story, and I'm not gonna place judgment on somebody until I know the whole story. But god damn it, can that dude act?
Yeah, really good actor.
We'll talk more about Loki later, but like when you brought Mel Gibson, made me think of it. Like that dude is so fucking good, and that's what I think about. Like Mel Gibson, like he said some crazy shit in his days, and he's not exactly the best of people. But
I'm surprised he got cast for this, but I guess he's just like got that crazy old man energy now, so they
forgot about the anti-Jew shit he said.
Yeah, which is really weird because he plays a very religious character in The Continental.
Wasn't he like extremely Catholic or something?
Yeah. Well, in the show he is, yeah.
Oh, no, I mean in real life. Yeah, he's the in one real that life, did, too.
Yeah,
he directed Passion of the Christ.
Passion of the Christ. But his character in The Continental is also super over-the-top Catholic.
So he not talks, a far stretch, then.
Yeah, he talks to God a lot. I think he's just playing himself, actually. They just have to film it. At one point, there's like they make like a special drug concoction for him, and he like breathes it in. And he keeps getting high off the fumes, and he's like takes a deep breath and he starts saying some crazy shit, and then he takes another deep breath, starts saying more crazy shit, and I was just like, how did we get here?
Is this a movie or is this a documentary of Mel Gibson's life?
It might be. I think they kind of just built everything around Mel Gibson going on a binge.
It's like we got Gibson of drugs. Let's make him do some crazy shit.
He's like, give me those drugs. All right, so we have some TV news. The Boys, Gen V, has been renewed for a second season. Nice.
From the three episodes I've watched, well deserved.
Nice. I don't know what episode we're on now.
Seven.
Seven. Came out. So I've watched six episodes. And I will say it's very good. There's some weird shit that happens where like they start to forget things, and then you like a couple episodes revolves around that, like who's making them forget things and like wiping their memory. So there's some controversy there. But you see a lot of the characters interacting more, which is great. And then we see somebody from one of the big shows comes in, and don't want to spoil it, but episode six, I believe he shows up, and it's.
That's already spoiled for me. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So Soldier Boy.
Yeah.
Soldier Boy shows up, and he's great because he's like one of the persons and like in their mind as like one of their boyfriends. It's really funny. Yeah
I want to catch up with crazy. It feels like all the time there's something going on right now, but that will be calming down because my parents left for Florida.
Nice.
And they're usually the ones that are like, we're doing a big family thing this weekend.
Yeah,
and they usually find out on Friday that it's Sunday morning.
Schedule, fit it into your schedule now.
Yeah. So now that they're like a million miles away, my schedule will clear up real quick.
There you go.
But yeah, I want to catch up with that. There's a few other. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff I'd love to catch up on, but that's one that's really big for me because I did love those first three episodes.
So I am watching Ahsoka, everybody. I haven't finished Rebels. I know you can be upset that it's
fucking poser.
I started season one of Rebels to like get the characters. I'm gonna catch up after. Ahsoka's really good though, not knowing a whole lot about Rebels. I kind of get the gist, and even if like they do a pretty good job of explaining things. Like I didn't know that much going into it besides like that, I've seen these characters before, but like they kind of are like, okay, we got to go here. This dude's a bad guy. This person sacrificed himself for his friends, and they all really love him, and we got to get him back. And Thrawn is a baddie. That's what I keep getting. They're like, he's no, not Thrawn. Dude. Every episode, they're like, not Thrawn. No, okay.
It's really just a secretly super racist series because the blue guy has to be the bad guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's always, why is it the blue guy? The blue man group.
It's actually funny because if you get into the Thrawn novels, which I know you won't, Mike, no. But if you ever do, one of the storylines of that is that the Empire is like super racist.
Oh.
And they're super like humanists. I can't remember if this is the old continuity or the new one.
I never realized that all the Empire is humans, though.
Is white dudes, yeah.
Yeah. Watch the new series, now we have like white women involved.
Well, yeah, the New Order is really woke. Like they got a black dude in the stormtrooper outfit and everything. It's cool.
Yeah.
That was a joke, everybody. I'm not actually, yeah. But anyways, the original Empire.
Moving on.
Is that so for Thrawn to make his way up like that, being an alien, like first and foremost, was like really big because he's just constantly treated like shit his entire way up the ladder. So that shows like his,
you don't think about that because like when you see all the officers like in the movies, yeah, you're right, there's no alien races involved at all.
Yeah, because the original Empire was based on Nazi Germany, right. Hence stormtroopers. And it was almost done on accident and then retconned later, because in the 70s, it's really hard to put a bunch of people, like hire a bunch of people to put them in makeup.
Yeah.
It's much easier to just get a bunch of people together and be like, here you go.
It's a lot harder to brainwash people as the Empire to rule the galaxy when they all start, they all don't look the same either.
Listen, Mike.
Yeah.
We all know how white dudes act.
Yeah, right. And you got to think like, oh, if we start putting people in charge of these alien races that we've already murdered their planets, that probably wouldn't look good. Oh, shit, we destroyed your planet. I do want to see the Calamar First Order officer, though.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, you Jedi scum. Just like one of the Calamar guys wearing like a little tiny hat.
Can we just
where are the lasers?
Can someone this is terrible, this is gonna get canceled, but could somebody retcon, because so Star Wars takes place a long, long time ago, so let's retcon that the Calamar are actually the people that come to Earth and form Germany, and yep, they're the real First Reich.
There you go.
And then evolve into whatever we are now.
Calamar Nazis.
By the way, everybody, I'm like 60% German. Yep. Because I think that'd be hilarious. Can we move on, Mike? I say something
terrible. Air Calamar. I'm trying to think of what his name would be. But I just want to see an evil version of him. Or one of his people, because he died a long time ago, I guess, according to this timeline.
Who's this?
Mon Calamar. What's
I believe there's a Sith Calamar.
Is there? That's amazing.
Oh, I can't spell.
I just want to I want to hear insults coming from one of those guys, because their voices are so ridiculous. Like, does he wear a hood? Is there like a hood covering his giant head?
Let's see. Oh, here we go. Wikipedia, the greatest website on earth.
For all your Star Wars information, all your Star Wars lore needs. There has to be. Somebody has had to have thought of it. If it was just me saying this now, there's been enough writers and people involved with the Star Wars universe.
Oh, yeah, like, what's this dude? This now is fan art, but that's pretty cool. Yeah, this has just turned into weird Mon Calamar shit, the podcast.
Yeah. He's my favorite person, to be honest. Who can spot a trap? He can spot a trap from a hallway.
He can spot a trap. He makes good raps.
Yeah, nice.
Moving on.
Okay. So either way, I'm liking Ahsoka, everybody. Even if you haven't watched all of Rebels, which I have not have, so long story short, it's good. Yeah. Reminds me a lot of Japanese cinema. The lightsaber battles are a lot like, I would say the lightsaber battles are better in this than in like the new movies. And the new movies, there's a lot of chopping and hacking. Like, but this one, there's like, it's like an art form, and I like it.
Yeah.
So
dealing with more trained people than untrained in the new one. So I think lightsaber battles make sense in the new movies, but it really does my heart well to know that people like you are enjoying it.
But why does Ahsoka, for my knowledge, why does she only use one lightsaber sometimes and sometimes two lightsabers? Or did something happen where she goes from two to one? Does she lose a lightsaber?
No, she's always had two in Clone Wars.
Because she has two in like the start of Ahsoka, and then she like when she fights people like one-on-one, she only uses one.
She just likes to use it. She likes to switch it up. Variety is the spice of life, Mike.
Okay, I do like her lightsabers. They're like katanas, though, like the hilt of them.
Yeah.
I do think that's sick. And I kind of want to buy a replica one. But
do you know the lore behind her white lightsabers?
No, I don't.
Okay, so the way a Jedi creates a white lightsaber.
Uh-huh.
So do you know how the Sith create red lightsabers?
Nope.
Okay. They infuse the kyber crystal with so much hate and anger that it turns red.
That's sick.
And the way a white lightsaber is created is by a Jedi extracting that hate and anger from a red lightsaber kyber crystal and purifying it.
Wow. That's pretty sick.
Yeah. I know some pretty useless shit, Mike.
Long story short, bring Chris to Star Wars trivia, everybody. I know the science behind the kyber crystals. I do know what a kyber crystal is. I watched Rogue One. Was it Rogue One that was in? Yeah.
Listen, ladies, if you want some kyber crystal knowledge, I am single.
He's your guy. JediMastersOnly.com. It probably exists. All right, Loki season 2 episode 3. I need to catch up on this. I will after Ahsoka, but how was it?
Really great episode. We talked earlier about Majors being a great actor, and he like just takes this episode and makes it his own, man. Like the character he's playing here, Victor Timely, which is a variant of Kang,
okay,
is just so drastically different from Kang that it's unbelievable. Like he's a very smart, like think Einstein, but with a stutter.
Like his last name is Timely.
Yeah, Victor Timely.
Okay.
So Victor Timely is somebody in the comics that Kang went back in time and placed himself as Victor Timely, an inventor.
Okay.
So they have him back at the TVA and they're trying to save the TVA. And at that same time, the Rogue group comes in and they're fighting and everything. It's a real back and forth episode as they're trying to fix the time weave that creates the timeline. And it's really fucking anticlimactic, but I loved it because they spend the whole episode being like, we need a Kang variant for this.
Yeah.
And he's got to open the door. He's the only one that can do it and this and that. They get him. They put him in the big bodysuit. He's going to take most of the episode is like them creating this device that's they're going to put in this thing and that's going to solve the problem. And he walks out the door and just dies.
That's amazing.
That's awesome. And that leads to what we think is the end of the TVA. Now, I have my doubts, Mike. You know why?
Why is that?
Because this was episode 4 of an 8-episode series.
I think you're onto something there, Chris. I think you're onto something.
But it was a really great cliffhanger ending. Most of the episode is just fantastic. A lot of back and forth, people turning on each other. It's kind of a hinge episode where everything past this is going to change what the series is. And it made me so excited to get into next week and watch. And I always say the best way to tell that a good cliffhanger just happened is if I get up and I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because I didn't want it to end. I want to know what happens next. So
right. You want
that's
more.
What this one did.
That's cool.
I think it's been a really great season so far.
Nice.
And your boy, Short Round, was really good in this too.
Yeah, he's been in every episode. He wasn't just a one-off character.
Yes.
Awesome. I'm glad he got to be in more than one episode. So
yeah, he's actually like a main character. Like, he's not like obviously Loki and Owen Wilson are the main characters, but he's part of the crew in like every episode. They're always going to him. He's involved with the whole shenanigans. So
nice.
Yeah, he's really good in this.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. And with that, everybody, we're going to jump to this interview with Jerome Gagnon. I'm going to talk some holiday spirits, some other stuff, and we'll see you on the other side.
All right, everybody, we've got another very special guest for you all. Everybody, please welcome to the show, Jerome Gagnon. Welcome, Jerome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And well done on the last name.
Chris, that was one of the tougher ones he's had to do. And I'm impressed, man. You did.
I've been on a streak recently.
Yeah, good for you.
Jerome, it's honestly, I'm going to cut in on you here, Mike. I love having you here. You're someone kind of behind the scenes that I talk to here and there. I got to meet you in person. Nice. And you're kind of one of those silent warriors that we always talk about on the show. You're a letterer.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to pull this up real quick. If you can tell everybody right here, hidden, because the important guy over here is the one we wanted in the picture, is Jerome in my Twitter profile. So
nice.
But yeah, it's a pleasure having you on, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, the unsung heroes of comic books. I know you do a lot of like organizational and developing titles and stuff. So I want to, we'll probably talk to you a little bit about lettering in a second. But as far as like how you got involved in comics, where did that all start? And then now you're heavily involved with everything at Orange Cone Productions. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, like most of the people, it's I started as a fan, of course. Mm-hmm. I've been working as a graphic designer for like over 25 years now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm old. But yeah, I always wanted to dip my toes in the comic books, and I drew a little bit when I was a teenager, but it was a long time ago, and never felt like I was as good as I would love to be. But so that went away. So at some point, like later on, like 7 years ago, I decided maybe I should try coloring. So I tried it. I really like it. I really enjoy coloring. But the thing is, I'm way too slow. It takes me so much time, like a week to work on a page. That's I get bored like too fast for that.
Yeah.
So, and I just I'm too picky, and I spent so many times on small details. But yeah, that was something I like, but just way too time consuming. So just figured out that, hey, lettering, that's something that I know I can do. I can pull that off. That's for sure. I mean, working with all the digital tools on my day-to-day job, I know all of that part. So all I need to know is the, like, balloon placement to make the story flow, like make it all sense and make it easy for people to follow the story. That's the only part that I really needed to know. Into graphs. So so yeah, and I started it, and it just blew up in most exciting way. I mean,
yeah.
So like 5-6 years ago, I started, and since then, I've never stopped. And I always have like 2 or 3 books that I need to work on. So
that's good. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Well, it can be very stressful at points.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure with deadlines and such. Let me just ask a question specific to lettering, because, I mean, we're going to talk about Holiday Spirits, and I know you did the lettering for that book, right?
Yeah.
And did the design of the book. But I'll see, as you flip through, for those of you who don't remember, it's a horror anthology revolving around mm-hmm. the holidays. But there are some different approaches to, like, you don't just use the same font. You don't use the same like color style of the way it. So how does that come about? Do you just put your own twist on everything of like, oh, maybe this story would like this type of like jagged lettering or just a regular basic font? How do you get into all that?
I want to have a different flavor for each of the stories. Because mm-hmm. For me, the difference between the Holiday Spirits and Cthulhu Invades series is the Holiday Spirits, they're very separate stories from mm-hmm. one another. They're a bit tied up because there's an opening and a closing story, but between those two, it's all separate stories. As opposed to Cthulhu Invades, I really wanted to use the same font on each of the stories because I wanted to read as a graphic novel. Because even though it's built like an anthology, it should be read like a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
then the approach on those two are different, very different. And usually, like in other spirits, when I work in anthologies, I really want to match the art style, find a lettering style that will blend well with the art styles. And it's also a way to show up my skills. I mean,
so, nice.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, as someone who doesn't really know that approach, I would think that like there isn't that much room to play with lettering, but I guess you see it in a different way, right? I mean, there's a lot you can do with it.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot. And well, we're fortunate enough nowadays to have all sorts of fonts, and like pro layers from the old era are now creating their own fonts and selling them. So we have access to all of those. So that makes it a lot more easier than it was when it was all letter by hand. And
and
yeah, my phone library is like gigantic.
yeah, you have a lot to choose from now.
Yeah.
So I guess let's talk about Holiday Spirits, and I do want to talk about how you did design the logo, right? So that's another thing I've spoken to some letterers about too, is like you can design logos. So this one in particular happens to have like mistletoe and blood dripping down from the spirits here, which is pretty awesome. So I do want to give you a shout out for that, because it with the red, it pops really on the cover. So I thought the logo design was really cool there. So how did you get about designing this book? Was this like an idea that you had that you kind of like orchestrated everything, or?
Well, I was just messing around with different sort of fonts and different logos and stuff. And I wanted to have something very clean, although it's an horror book. I didn't want to go in like the scratchy, grungy type of fonts and that sometimes, that most of the time comes to mind when we talk about horror. I didn't want to look like it's just a slasher movie title or something like that. So I went for something cleaner, but I wanted to have like just that small that small drop of blood was like just a hint that something's happening there. And well, the mistletoe is just the Christmas flavor.
Yeah, that was a little touch of Christmas.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And for Holy Spirits, the big difference actually for that book is that that's a book that I've come up with the idea of created that one while working on Cthulhu Invades. So, well, I can, if you want, I can run you the small backstory of the book.
Sure. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear. Yep.
Yeah, so we're putting the final touch to Cthulhu Invades Oz. And it was like between Christmas and January, I was working on it. And the title of the book just popped in my head. And I said, oh, that could be a cool horror anthology. So I asked a few friends, what do you think? And they said, yeah, that's great. And if you want a story, I'm in. So
nice.
So nice. Yeah. I talked to Travis about it. And he said, you know, man, because I live in Canada, doing a Kickstarter comes with a much higher price range because of the shipping. It can be it can be hard. So Travis told me that, look, if you want to do it, and I'll take charge. I'll take care of the Kickstarter campaign, because it will just be impossible for you to do it in Canada. So you took care of that part, and that was a big relief for me actually. It worked well with the first one, so we did the second one, and now I'm working on the third one.
Nice.
And you've done some in between as well with the Christmas and July issues too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The idea for that one was because the Comic Con in Montreal is happening in July. So I was kind of worried to come up with at my booth with the Christmas book. We had all different books from Orange Cone and different other books that I've lettered, but I wanted to show up my book at Montreal's Comic Con. But Christmas book just felt weird, so I said, hey, maybe a Christmas in July spinoff. And it just made much more sense with next to the other ones, and well, it worked. So we did the second one as well. So so far we have three Holiday Spirits and two Holiday Spirits Christmas in July. So
nice. Very cool.
Yeah. And when you were putting the book together, you said you called a bunch of friends to see if they would do it. And I mean, you like I kind of joked about earlier, but it's true. Like, you've done so much across the comics and working on different stuff. Were those initial friends some of the people that end up in the book? Like, Hedrick and Gibb and all the others that are part of it?
Yeah, Jonathan Hedrick, I've worked with him on his Capable series. So I've known him for a few years already. Travis, well, obviously, I did the first Broke Down and Forwarded Bodies with him, and since then I worked on all the books you've put out. So it's been like 5-6 years now. Kurt Belchard, I know him from like before that even. There's a few that I worked on a book like at the same time I was working on All of These Spirits, and I just invited them. So some newer friends, some older friends as well. I don't want to. I prefer to contact people I know for that type of thing because, anthologies, the page range, the price for the page are not that high. So if you don't know the people that well, maybe sometimes they say, "Oh, I don't know you. Why would I do that for?"
Right. For that work. Yeah. And we could say Holiday Spirits is coming to comic stores, right?
Yeah.
Coming to local shops. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we're super happy about it. It's been picked up by a new publisher called Ben of Bards.
Yep.
They've been around since 2021. Mm-hmm. And this is actually, it's the same book, but we did a different cover from that.
Yeah, it's a cool cover.
Yeah. The cover artist is Shane Volk. He worked on, he's the Nottingham guy.
Oh, okay. Great.
So he did.
That's why it looks so familiar to me.
Yeah. Does all the series, that series, the covers and everything. So yeah, he's a tremendous artist, and he's very nice guy to work with as well. Super easygoing.
And you can order it. Chris has got it pulled up right now. You can that nice cover. You can order through.
Preview. Yeah.
Yeah, it's also coming out in December, right?
The pre-order for the comic shops or the pre-order is over now. If your comic shop ordered it, well, you'll be able to pick it up there. If not, I think you will be able to order it through the Ben of Bar store.
Okay, great. Their website.
Yeah, I think final order cutoff hasn't hit it quite yet because you can still order it on the previews Pullbox app.
Okay.
So, but that's today as we're talking. That could change in the next couple of days when this releases.
Yeah.
That's the part I'm less familiar with. Not exactly sure how pre-order works, but that's what I was told. I thought it was ending like last week, but maybe there's a few days left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if not, I'm sure you can place an order to through Ben of Bards directly, and they'll set it up for you.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. And I'll have all those links in the show notes, everybody, so you can check those out. But there's also, and there's other stuff you got coming out as well.
Right? Yeah. Well, all the Spirits Tree, the campaign should be going on like in a few weeks.
Oh, great.
Like mid-November, probably.
Cool.
Or like end of November. But before that, we will be launching Granite State Punk, The Coven.
Oh, cool.
Which is the third issue.
Nice.
And we should have launched by now. We wanted to launch like last week, but on the 21. Yeah, it was supposed to launch on the 21. But there were some covers missing, I think. But we get one more now, and not sure if we're waiting for another one. But it should be in the next few days. This one will go live.
Cool.
Yeah, I think everybody knows my feelings on Grant State Punk, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, not a fan, right?
Yeah.
there might be a page right behind my head.
Yeah.
The
book's almost done. I think Patrick has done all the art so far. and he's grinding on the last pages to color. So, and I've lettered like the first 13 pages, I think. Well, we still need to make some edits, but yeah. Cool. Yes, we're pretty far in.
So that book should be a nice quick turnaround.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And then you also have some stuff that's not with Mr. Gibb. I mean, you got to keep your options open if that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Dead Kingdom. I know this is a book I've been like looking at for a while. And now that I see volume one's coming to trade soon, which I believe you did the letters for.
Yeah.
And then volume two, issue one will be out around the same time.
Yeah. On the same date, actually. That's weird to me, but yeah.
Well, that's an old Image Comics thing. Like they put out the volume one and then they put it out at like $10 and then issue whatever to volume two comes out around the same time.
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, I never noticed that, but I was thinking that they would put the book out, the trade out, and like month after, like the next issue. But well, it is what it is. I mean, as long as the book is coming out, I'm happy for it. I'll be happy to go and pick it up myself on the comic shelf. So, yeah, it's coming out on January 17th. So now is the time to do all the pre-orders, and because if you haven't got the first miniseries, the trade paperback is like the best option because like the first two issues are completely sold out. So
that's the only way you can get it then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a Red 5 book, and if I remember correctly, it's a zombie book set in like.
In medieval era.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So there's black magic and different cool stuff in there, definitely. And I know my friend Etienne. You said my name was hard to pronounce, but Etienne would be a challenge, I think. His last name, but. So my friend Etienne, he has been thinking about that book for a very long time. He had the whole story in his mind. And he sent it to a mutual friend of ours, Ben Ferrari, who had a book coming out at Red 5. The book is Carriers, a book about like action pigeons. And he sent a book to Ben, and Ben said, okay, I'll check it out. And Ben just sent it to Red 5. So he just sent it up. And Red 5 contacted Etienne, or I'm not sure if they contacted him directly or they contacted Ben. It's just said, hey, we want to do it. So, so that was that was super great. A weird way to get in the business. But yeah, it worked well. And we did the first miniseries, and I think... Not sure exactly, but I think he has planned like 5 miniseries. Is it 4 or 5? I think it's 5. So, like, and he's working. He's already working on the third one. So, the volume 2. It's all done. It's all in the hands of Red 5 at the moment. So, just waiting for it to release.
Yeah. Oh, that's great to hear. That means no delays.
No, I mean, if there's any delay, it can happen. But if there's any delay, it's probably like the Diamond or something, because they sent all the book to print at the same time. So it should be all done.
And I know from experience, Diamond has delays.
Yeah. Well, the first miniseries, they delayed the first issue like 4 or 5 times. So, yeah, it was a lot. So yeah, we have that one coming up, and we have other stuff that it's another book that Etienne and I are working on, I'm not sure exactly when that one will come out. So we'll talk about it another time. But yeah, we have something else.
But something you probably can talk about, because I'm pretty sure it comes out next month, is you were asked to do the Assassin's Creed book as well?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, how did that come about? Yeah, I guess I never heard the story there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that one, when I heard the story, how I came up in that book, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. How you got, okay, how you got the gig. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a comic book studio in Montreal called Lunac. Mm-hmm. And they are located like straight behind Ubisoft, which is a huge game designer.
Yeah.
And they do some stuff, some comic book related stuff for them. And last Comic Con, the thing is, I don't know many people in Montreal in the comic book business. So most of the people I know are in Florida, like, you know, Travis, Jonathan, and all that crew. So in Montreal, I don't have that many contacts. So I decided to, I looked at the people at the Comic-Con, and I saw that Lunac was there. I said, I should go on and give them a card just in case. And they contacted me. At first, it was, they wanted to meet me. So I came to their office. And they asked me if I was able to do lettering, but in different languages. So I said, okay. Like, what do you mean? Like 6 or 7 different languages? Is that something that you'd be up for?
Yeah.
Said, okay, that can be a challenge. So they offered me to do at first lettering for a mobile game for Rainbow Six.
Oh, okay.
So there's... You know, there's those cinematic elements in a video game, but on the mobile, there's some comic book strips.
Okay.
And they do it in 13 languages, I think. And they asked me to do it in like 7 of them. So I did that.
Do you speak 7 languages, Jerome?
No, I don't. Oh. I know, but I can. I speak French, of course.
Yeah,
right. I knew you spoke French, but I'm like 7. I'm like, this is 7's a lot. The comic industry, man.
Yeah, what the hell?
But I can figure out Spanish and Italian and Spanish. Yeah, I can figure it out a little bit. German. That's not. I don't know it, but. Well, it's not that hard. I mean, all you need to know is just I try not to leave any hyphens in any words,
mm-hmm.
just in case it doesn't make sense, because you cannot hyphen a word at a weird spot. So to make so I just there's the, just no hyphens in the books in those strips.
Right.
I'm very careful with that. They do some weird ones like in Korean and Japanese and Russian, so I haven't done those. But apparently there's a trick to know where to cut the words, and anyways, so after that, after the first round for Rainbow Six, they asked me if I wanted to do Assassin's Creed. I said, sure, come on.
Nice. Yeah.
Of course I want. And but that book actually was supposed to be a big hardcover anthology released through Kickstarter. And they launched a campaign like earlier on in 2023. But I think the campaign wasn't successful. I think the goal was too high probably for the amount of talent that's in there. I mean, the goal had to be pretty high. But they decided to go a different route and release it in small issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the art is all done. And they just, when it's close to publishing time, they just send me the pages. I've lettered the first one. They told me I should be lettering it's a 4-issue miniseries. They told me I should be lettering the other 3, but that's so far I haven't got those yet.
Okay.
But awesome. they keep sending me different stuff for Rainbow Six. So
nice. Very cool.
Awesome.
So yeah, I'm busy. They also do a Rainbow Six web series. I think there are different chapters they put on the web, like a comic book, but they don't have the publishing rights for Rainbow Six, so they do it on mobile apps and on web series. So
cool, that's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, lots of things with Rainbow Six and Assassin's Creed. So then that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So let me ask you, through all of this, when do you go outdoors?
That's a good one. No, actually, I go outdoors. I try to go out as many times as I can. I need to walk out the dog every morning and every night. Actually, on top of that, I was coaching my girls on their baseball team this year. So
nice.
So
there you go.
So that's a way to make it sure that I leave the house sometimes.
Maybe the better question is when do you sleep? But yeah, we won't get into that.
Yeah. Right. That's funny.
Yeah, that's probably the thing that. that I do less in the way.
Awesome.
Well, we need sleep anyways.
Yeah, right.
Sleep read
more
dead.
Comics. Yep. Read more comics. Jerome, awesome. I mean, I'm really excited for the next Holiday Spirits. I think it's really cool that it's coming out in comic shops. And I think that's really great for you that you get to reach a wider audience, I would say now. So really happy for you. Thanks for being on the show. And if you have anywhere you want to send the listeners or our followers, do you have a website or just a Twitter that you want to send them to?
Sure. I mean, I'll just update my name.
There you go. Oh yeah, you can put it right in the.
Yeah. You know. That would be that's my Twitter handle.
Okay.
So yeah, you can follow me there. That's I've posted most of my comic book stuff on Twitter. More than Facebook or
I would say it's
probably I always say I should do more Instagram stuff, but I feel it takes more time.
Sure.
Dropping those images and
it's too much time for all that social media. Yeah. But JBoy495, everybody.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And to everybody out there watching and listening, I'll have links in the show notes to to the things we talked about, at least that Jay's got or Jerome's got going on. So you can click on those, check them out, including the launch page for Granite State Punk and then the previews pages for some of the books we talked about. So make sure to go check those out. Ask your local comic shops about them and click on the Kickstarter as well.
And make sure to place the pre-orders in time for the comic shops, because pre-orders are super important, especially for indie comics, because if you don't pre-order, the store will probably don't get the books. And but if you pre-order, they will probably most probably order a few more. So
yes. And important, something we don't bring up enough, if you click on those links and you see the previews page for whatever book we're talking about, let's say Holiday Spirits, there is a code on there. So if you keep that on your phone or something, just bring that to your local comic shop. It makes it even easier for the comic shop to find the book and order it.
Yep.
So do that. So Jerome, thanks so much for stopping by and chatting, man.
My pleasure.
Been loving all the books you're working on. So look forward to what's coming up. And we're back.
Jerome, very cool individual, nominated for a Ringo, so that's always really cool.
Yeah, done a lot of cool stuff. If you kickstart a comic on Kickstarter, you've probably have a Jerome book in your pile. The dude is working.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah,
cool. And I'd like more horror anthologies, everybody. Comic news. There's some leftover news that hit after the New York Comic Con episode. It seems that the Star Wars line at Marvel isn't going to move forward with post-Return of the Jedi content, but instead go to past go to the past with content set before the events of the Clone Wars. Interesting move, Chris.
Bold move, Cotton.
Yeah. The first series will be Star Wars Mace Windu, which I did see, which will be Marvel's second Mace Windu series, which will be written by Mark Bernardin with art by Jorge Ginti. Mark Bernardin writing a Mace Windu book. I'm pumped for that.
When we're done, I'll talk about the overall initiative. But yeah, if we're going to go back to that time, you better give me a fucking Mace Windu book.
Yeah. And Mark Bernardin writing it. I love Mark Bernardin. So
yeah. And I'm down for this book in particular.
Yep. Second series will replace long running Star Wars Bounty Hunter series is titled Star Wars Jango Fett. The Jango series will be written by Ethan Sachs, who also wrote the Bounty Hunter series with art by Luke Ross. Finally, we get a comic adaptation of the Star Wars novel Star Wars Thrawn Alliances, and will go by the same name, will be adapted by Timothy Zahn, the novel's writer, and Jody Hauser, with art by Andrea DeVito and Pat Olaf. There's no word about the future of the series, like Star Wars Dr. Aphra and Star Wars Darth Vader. Chris, you got to be pretty pumped for that.
So the Jango book, I mean it's basically Boba Fett, so
yeah, Jango's whatever, right?
I'm gonna pick it up. I'm gonna read it. I buy almost all of the Star Wars books. I don't buy the adaptations of the TV shows or the adaptations of movies, but like the new content. And the Bounty Hunter book's been really good under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And Jango's a cool enough character. I mean, he doesn't do much other than get his head chopped off in the movies. So
right.
You can really do whatever and tell some cool stories. So I think there's something really cool you can be done there, and I'm down to go along that ride. The Thrawn stuff, that's one adaptation I will get. I have the other Thrawn adaptation they did, and I love Thrawn. Obviously he's becoming a big character in the TV show world, soon to be movie world. He's just a great villain. So any way to get him out there, and what a perfect time to do so, because everybody's talking about Thrawn right now. So, yeah, I'm down for these. I think the idea of a whole of going back to that timeline as opposed to moving forward, we don't know 100% that's what they're doing, but mm-hmm. this really, really hints to, well, if you're going to cancel a main book, because there's been three main Star Wars books. It's been Star Wars, Darth Vader, and Star Wars Bounty Hunters. And then Dr. Aphra kind of spun out of Darth Vader and has done her own thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're canceling Bounty Hunters to bring out Jango Fett, that really does hint to me that when we get Star Wars number one again, it's going to be set in that timeline. And then who knows what, like, I could see Aphra moving on and them just keeping that because she's a popular character.
Right.
But the Vader book, who knows what they do. Personally, I think that General Grievous is a really cool character that didn't get enough shine and had some kind of corny moments in Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a cool character to follow around. But my main disappointment is I wanted to see what happened to these characters after Return of the Jedi. I want a little bit more of Luke and his story. But it seems like Disney's set on letting Filoni and crew take care of that.
Do their thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, tiny bit disappointed, but I don't hate that timeline like a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. I really only think the Clone Wars movie is the only thing in that timeline that's just like really bad.
Yeah.
In terms of the movies. Phantom Menace is a fine enough movie. It's not great. And then Revenge of the Sith is a good movie. It just doesn't live up to the original ones. So, there's some cool stuff that we've done there. We'll see what else they have to announce in the near future.
Yeah, it's shaking things up for sure, though.
Yeah, it's like I said, it is a bold move, like to go that direction.
Yeah, to completely shift.
Yeah.
Because
a part of me thought they would even go and just start telling in between 7 and 8.
Right.
There was a big part of me that was like, that's what's going to happen. We're going to get the Star Wars book about Rey, and then we're going to get the Kylo Ren book, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But not so much.
James Tynion IV and Dark Horse Comics announced the sequel to James Tynion's Blue Book. The new volume entitled Blue Book 1947 will feature art from returning artist Michael Avon Oeming. This series will take place 14 years before the first volume. It'll be about Kenneth Arnold's UFO sighting near Mount Rainier. Cool. I have not read the first series, but that is definitely something that interests me.
Yeah, that's one of the... It's one of the sightings that's known as like the beginning of UFOlogy.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say that word. I've only ever read it. But it's kind of the beginning of the whole UFO conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting they're going that way. I thought the first volume was really good. It is a very unique read.
Mm.
I mean, in that it's these people see a UFO, and then it's how does that sighting affect their life? Mostly negatively, but negatively and positively. So it's really a slice of life book just about some people that may or may not be crazy.
Yeah, right.
So I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to this one a lot.
I think it is interesting. Like, I watched when they came out with the second new season of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. They had the one episode about a UFO sighting. And, like, the UFO sighting was really interesting, but you also had a guy whose career was completely ruined because he reached out and told people that's what was happening. Like, he saw it on the radar that night, and people had, so like the police had called him and been like, hey, did you see anything? He goes, yeah, I saw something that I couldn't explain. And then like he had to quit his job and move because like people were just shitting on him all the time.
And that's kind of, the first Blue Book is kind of that, like this couple has to go to therapy. They do like hypnotherapy to figure out if it, like, did they get brainwashed by the government or something? You know, like,
yeah.
They do all this weird shit because they told people their story and they were just immediately told that they were whack jobs, but they firmly believe that they saw what they saw. And
crazy.
Believe them or not, like, that's what they believed. And I think it's a good book. I like I said, but it's hard to really recommend to a lot of people because it's a very unique book.
Right.
Yeah.
Lastly, Titan Comics announced the first comic based on Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon movies. This comic will be titled Rebel Moon, House of Blood Axe, will debut in January. It will be written by Mags Visaggio with art by Clark Bent. I did watch the Rebel Moon trailer. It looked like a movie that I would check out. Hopefully it's like coherent with the plot. But we'll see. I can't remember when the movie comes out.
December.
Netflix. Okay. Nice.
Yeah, because I think I said when it first happened that it reminds me, it's somewhere in between Dune and Star Wars, which, yeah, you know me,
yeah,
should raise some flags right away.
Right.
But it's also directed by Zack Snyder, who has a tricky track record.
After Sucker Punch, I will not be deceived again with a very nice trailer.
I think Zack has done, so his Dawn of the Dead movie is great.
Yep.
Is legitimately great. His Army of the Dead movie is pretty good. I enjoyed it. But where he's thrived was exact adaptations. So 300 and Watchmen. Now you can, I know people hate Watchmen, but really outside of the ending, which is mostly the same to all the haters out there, they are one for one adaptations.
Yeah.
For the most part. Where he fails is when he tries to like do his own thing, aka Sucker Punch, aka, you know, Batman v Superman, so on and so forth. I know you disagree with me on the Batman one, but
yeah,
I'm interested in this movie. Now, the problem with this is someone like me, that means the orders for this go up this month, well, next month in November. I ain't ordering a prequel book for a movie I haven't seen.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. It seems like if it's a prequel book, the movie's not out yet. The timing is very strange. And not having Zack Snyder's name on the book, like as a co-writer.
I think it's... I just realized I have like... Yeah, I had covers I was going to show during the show. But yeah, we're playing this by ear.
Yeah, that's all
right. So let me see. I'm looking at it. Because it's said to be based on his notes.
Okay, so he wrote notes or something?
So he has like a world biography. Uh-huh. Or Baby Yoda, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But he has the world set and like what happened and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's based on that.
Okay.
It's not like he's not involved in some way. Because when this was announced, if you remember, it was supposed to be comics, movies, TV shows, and video games. Like it mm-hmm. was, this was Netflix's big thing. They're going to, this is going to be their Star Wars or whatever. So, he's involved. I don't think his name wasn't on any of the covers, though. It doesn't say Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon.
Mm.
Just says Rebel Moon.
Interesting.
But we'll see. I mean, hopefully for Titan that a final or cutoff is after the movie comes out.
You guys got to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about what we read. I had some stuff that I was catching up on. I haven't read any books from this week, but just some stuff that I read. I read the Batman Superman World's Finest number 20. That was when that's when we go back to Kingdom Come.
Yep.
I thought it was a really cool issue. Anything involving Kingdom Come is really good, but I think Mark Waid, I mean, it's his universe, right? So he did a great job bringing them back there and having the interactions, and they're trying to find David, who's like gone off the deep end. Green Lantern War Journal number 2.
Real quick about World's Finest.
Oh yeah,
I also read it. I really liked it. I think he needs to do a little bit more with the Kingdom Come stuff.
Yeah,
because honestly, it's after one issue, everybody. So I am very open to changing my opinion once this story's done. But after one issue, it feels like a gimmick because it feels like we could have thrown this kid anywhere.
Right.
And had the same.
We need more involvement from the Kingdom Come characters.
Yeah. But I did like that moment where they're time jumping.
Uh huh.
And they see all the heroes' graves.
Yeah.
And old. Yeah. That was a great moment. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Good issue.
We haven't talked about this, Chris. Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, number 1. Buccoletto and Duce on the art. Deuce.
All right. Don't you worry. I'll just find this giant pile. Boom.
There it is. Nice. Basically, the Legion of Doom ends up on Skull Island and like makes a wish to get all the monsters back to the DC Earth to fight Superman, because they want to fight Superman. So like the issue ends with like Godzilla arriving on the DC Earth, which is kind of, you know, all right, now I'm ready for them to fight. But I think it was an interesting way to kind of tie it all together. It's like the Legion of Doom trying to fight Superman with these monsters.
I want to make one correction because I find it really funny.
Yeah.
The Legion goes to the Skull Island, not knowing where they are.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't the Legion that wished for the monsters to come. It was Toy Man.
Oh, yeah, it was Toy Man. Yeah, that's right.
Who just gets shit on this entire issue.
Yeah, they're like, you're terrible. What, do you just have toys? And he's like, well, now I have bigger toys.
And I love that Gorilla Grodd goes missing, and it's because he found a gorilla god in Kong.
Yeah.
It was a really great issue, but it's something that you say a lot. Like, I would have liked to see more Godzilla in my Godzilla comic, but...
Thank you. I didn't say it this time because I feel like a broken record, Chris, every time I read a Godzilla book. But it's like, guys, if you have a Godzilla in the title of a book, please give me more than one page of Godzilla. All right, just one, like a few pages is all I'm asking.
If for anyone out there willing to correct Mike, yes, it was like 2 or 3 pages, but it was the same page done 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
Because they literally redo the intro and the ending.
Yes, they do.
But my hype's still up there for this.
Oh, I thought it was a good setup and I'm ready for the rest of it for sure. Green Lantern War Journal number 2, Johnson and Montos. Yeah, Green Lantern gets attacked by the zombie lanterns, and he gets hit and he's infected. So we'll see where that pans out. I'm still really liking this book though.
John Stewart
Lantern.
Yeah, it's really cool. There's a lot of backstory in this issue, and the only thing I don't know. I've had some dealings with people that have Alzheimer's in my life, and John's mom, well, they don't outright say she has Alzheimer's, but they kind of hinted in the first issue.
Yeah.
And then this issue, she seems like just fine.
Right. Yeah.
So I was a little confused by that, but that was kind of a tiny thing that I was thinking about during the issue.
Yeah, I did notice that too.
Other than that, I like that John's like infected at the end of this issue now because he got stabbed with a zombie sword.
Let's see what happens to him. I did read Cap Wolf and the Howling Commandos by Stephanie Phillips and Magno on the art.
Damn
right. I thought it was awesome. It was a lot of fun, like you said. A lot bloodier than I thought it would be for a Captain America book. Wesley Dodds, Sandman, number one, Venditti and Rossmo. I don't know if you talked about this one already.
I did, but...
But I thought it was an interesting first issue of him, like... He's trying to sell that gas to the army to be like a peace gas, and then someone steals the plans and his home gets burned down. I think it's an interesting approach for the Sandman character. Of he was always like a throwaway, like some dude on the streets, and him to be like this big plans guy that invented this gas and wants to like market it, or not market it, but like save the world with it. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. Jake Eric, The Flash, number one, Adam and Olor Tegui. This was interesting. It's a story about Judy Garrick is back, which we saw at the end of the whole Stargirl series. She was taken from time during this fight with Dr. Elemental. So, like, she was an integral part of that. And now that she's back, she's kind of like, you know, when we took down Dr. Elemental and the Flash and his wife, Joan, I think, are like, no, Dr. Elemental's still around. And so Dr. Elemental was never taken down in the past because she's back. So I'm sure there's some repercussions there. Something's going to happen. But it was a good issue for sure.
Run really fast?
Yes, they did. Okay. That one deals with like this timeline and then the past timeline, because even Jay was like, in the past, he was kind of like, we never had a daughter. And then like when he sees her now, he like remembers her. So there's like something weird happening.
Oh, they do that moment from the JSA?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yep. Superman 7, Williamson, Melnikoff, and this is the anniversary edition. Because there's some other stuff going on in the issue, but
it's the oversized issue 850.
Yeah. Anniversary issue or whatever. So
right there.
There it is. Superman fighting the chained villain, which was interesting. While he's there, Lex's mother and daughter shows up to him at the hospital because he's still in the hospital after he got shanked in prison. And then we see Brainiac like getting ready to conquer the Earth as the big bad. So a lot of things are in play here in the Superman's book. The Superman book's been really good, and I'm a huge Brainiac fan, so to see him come back is great.
Yeah, and he's got some Lobo people with him.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the Lobo twins or whatever.
So, I forget what the race is called now.
Yeah.
But, I thought all in all, it was a really great issue. I'm calling out Marvel here. This is how you do an oversized issue.
Yeah.
The entire book is the story.
It's one story.
That goes into the rest of the series. It doesn't have a backup story by Bumfuck Nobody that I don't care about.
Bumfuck Nobody. We're actually interviewing We're interviewing Bumfuck Nobody next week, so watch what you say.
It gets so like, and sometimes it's like with backup story, like the Thor one has, or it doesn't matter. It'll be like backup story by Frank Miller, and I'm like, oh, I like Frank Miller, and I read it, I'm like, yeah, but like, why?
Yeah, why did you do that story?
Like, you charged me more for a story I didn't want. Like, I want, like, yeah. So that's how you do an oversized issue, everybody. Marvel, do that, please, so I don't feel like I wasted my money just to keep my collection going. But it was a great issue.
And it was funny because when I did see that it was an anniversary issue, I like heavy sighed, like, oh fuck, here we go, all these shitty stories in there that I don't want to read. And then when I finished the issue, Chris, I was like, wait, where's all the backup stories?
Yeah.
I was like, where are they? Oh, wait. Oh, my God. This is all about the current timeline. I'm like, this is great.
It was awesome. It was refreshing. Yeah.
I was like, imagine doing that. Yeah. More of that.
Good issue. So,
yeah, really good issue. That's all I had. I got a lot of stuff from this week I need to read. I did go to a comic shop in the middle of driving between like Ohio and Detroit last week. And I stopped in this Keith's Comics, I believe. I don't remember where in Ohio it was. And I bought he had a bunch of back issues of Barbaric and the new series, the old series, the one shot. So I collected a bunch of those, and I think I might have the full set of everything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I was pretty excited to see that.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Keith Comics then.
Keith's Comics.
So I'm going to go quick through most of these, but this is going to be this week, next week. I got them all mixed up. Normally I have them in order so I can do them correctly, but fuck it.
That's right. Fuck it.
Marvel Zombies, Red, White, and Blood. Fun issue, but so the Daredevil story wasn't what it was advertised to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of just like cage fight Daredevil, and then Punisher puts a giant bomb on him to kill people. I like the Spider-Man story because it's Spider-Man trying to save people at the Daily Bugle, and then zombie Aunt May comes, and he has to like deal with the repercussions of that.
Nice.
And then the last one is a Moon Knight story where Ra takes over zombie Iron Man and controls him to fight Moon Knight. And then doing that, Moon Knight gets bitten. And now Khonshu has a zombie under his control. So it was a cool kind of couple cool stories. I always like Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Universal Monsters Dracula, number one.
Oh.
Sequel to the movie.
Nice.
So this follows Renfield and his plans to kind of help Dracula. I think my main criticism here is I like the art. It's Martin Simmons, who does Department of Truth with Tinian. And Tinian's the writer on this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But his art can be hard to follow. For instance, if you can see that, like he does kind of watercolor and it's almost blurred. So it does take time to get used to it. But I thought the story was really good. And it leans into a lot of the elements from the original Universal Monsters version of Dracula and just kind of extends it, especially bringing in Renfield and all of his issues. So I'd like that one if you're a Dracula fan. Batman Beyond Neo Gothic number 4.
Yes.
This is how you do origin stories, everybody.
Oh, boy.
Because we get the Catboy's origin story in this. And it's done as part of the story while mm-hmm. going back in time and retelling what happened. It's like 3 pages and then we're out.
Nice.
On top of that, it's them kind of descending into this abyss. And it leans heavily into the animated universe stuff. So the art actually changes at one point to a style that resembles the New Adventures of Batman and Batman Beyond.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then kind of dives in and out because they're hallucinating throughout the issue. And then we kind of get the Court of Owls, Batman's big plan at the end and find mm-hmm. out that there's someone else that's involved, and I think you're going to enjoy who's involved, Mike.
Oh, boy.
Captain America number 2. Captain America's landlord number 2. this issue actually is mostly in the past where we're dealing with that, like, those Nazi group people that are, like, doing stuff in New York City and trying to get sympathy from America prior to World War II.
Okay.
Or before World War II. Prior's before, right?
Yes.
Okay, I said that right.
Yeah,
you did. Second guessing myself left and right today. And how Steve, even back then, was kind of standing up to them and saying, like, no, like, they show one of the speeches where they're talking about it. And he says in the middle of the speech to this guy on a podium, like, yeah, like, you say all this, but, you know, what about the concentration camps? And then the guy's like, listen, there's no concentration camps. They're just work camps. And they actually live very comfortably in those work camps.
Oh, my God.
You know, like,
yeah,
the shit you've heard in history class.
Oh, yeah.
But it's stuff like that. So it was really interesting to see him in the past fighting against that. He stands up for some Orthodox Jewish people who get beaten up by some not neo-Nazis, but actual Nazis back then, everything. There's a lot of cool moments. And then in the present, it's just him being a landlord, which I still think is kind of weird.
Yeah.
I think they should have just set this book in the past.
Yeah.
But there was one fun moment where Spider-Man comes to him for help because he has broken ribs and the Sinister Six are after him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Doc Ock's the one that's putting it all together. So he goes, can you come help me? And like, we'll stake out this place tonight. And that way, like, I have someone watching my back. And like, the battle just never happens. So they're just sitting out in this ledge for hours.
Wow.
Like, looking out. And then they find out, like, oh yeah, like, Doc Ock had something across town, so he couldn't come. So it's going to happen another time. That was a really funny moment.
What the hell?
I Hate Fairyland number 10. At this point, this book is what it is. It's mm-hmm. I Hate Fairyland. And I like that now we're 10 issues in. We've fully gotten rid of adult Gert. We've moved on to kind of retcon so that we have child Gert again.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be the center point of the story. And in this, they find a way to get Claudia, the Empress of Fairyland, out of prison to get a key to try to escape. But Claudia backstabs him at the last minute. She ends up using the key to go to the real world, leaving Gert behind. So it was an interesting, interesting issue. Avengers Inc. number 2. I won't get too much in that, but I really like this book. It's Avengers meets kind of like crime noir kind of stuff. So we've got a murder mystery in this one. That's really fun. Your Scrappers. Favorite? What's that?
I said your favorite.
Oh yeah. And what's actually interesting getting into it is the guy. So in the first issue, I told you that someone took over. What's the villain's name? I'm zoning now. Whirlwind. Whirlwind's body.
Okay.
And that person is calling himself Victor Shade.
Interesting. Oh my
God. Which is Vision's surname.
Okay.
So she actually gets Vision to meet him. And like mm-hmm. he has the little thing in his head too to look like Vision.
Yeah.
And to kind of confront him to see what happens. So that was a cool interaction. Scrappers number 4. Another fun little book about a dog who can talk and is fighting against a megacorp. I think it's a really fun book. I always enjoyed Cliff Bleszinski back in my harder gaming days. And I think he's got a really cool story here. So I think more people should check it out. Daredevil number 2 is... So things are going crazy in New York. Matt's back to being Daredevil and fighting against this new crime gang in town. But at the same time, he's trying to run this missionary. And there's somebody out there that's trying to stop the missionary and ends up calling the cops on him, accusing him of all this stuff. And he finds out that the person behind it is actually an old friend from the Daily Bugle named Ben Urich.
Okay.
Which longtime Marvel fans know is just like Ben Marvel's go-to, like, we need a reporter in this story.
Yeah.
And it's Ben. I'm pretty sure he's the lead character in the Marvel's book that Alex Ross did. And then we got Guardians of the Galaxy number 7, which centers around Hulkling and Wiccan as they try to find the Guardians in Groot space. And they do. But there's something definitely wrong with them as they come out of the Groot verse or whatever the hell we're calling it.
Yeah.
And their mission is to go there and figure out what's going on so they can go back to the Council of the different planets and figure out what to do next, whether they should invade Groot space or they should just leave it alone or whatever. And they come to the conclusion they should leave it alone, try to hold a vote. But Star-Lord's sister, quote-unquote, who's in charge of Spartax now, basically says, fuck that, we're going in there. And so we're going to get a big battle coming soon.
Nice.
Blade number 4, Mike.
Oh, nice.
It's the big train heist issue.
Yeah, because they got to get the weapon on the height on the train.
Yeah, Lucifer's sword.
Yeah,
really great issue. Just a lot of good stuff here. I won't spoil too much, but a lot of good train heisting, a lot of good vampire killing. The Blade book's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really like that series.
And then I got a couple manga and a couple Kickstarter books I want to spotlight. Red Kaiju number 8, volume 2.
Nice.
Still really good.
I think the new volume came out. I have to get.
Yeah, volume 8 just came out.
Yeah, Kaiju number 8, number 8.
There you go. I read the Joker manga.
Oh, I bought that one. Yeah, I haven't read it yet. It's
exactly as advertised, Mike.
Yeah, the babies. So,
Joker and Batman are fighting, and Joker dumps Batman into a vat of acid, thinking that he killed him. Mm-hmm. What he finds out is it was a de-aging formula that was supposed to help people look younger.
Oh, my God.
And it worked so well that it turned Batman into a baby.
Of course it did.
So now Joker's a single dad trying to take care of this baby, but he needs to make sure that he grows up with a strong sense of justice so that he can become Batman, so that Joker can fight Batman.
Makes sense. It really, when
and prove that and prove that justice is bullshit.
It really
and it's
makes
just
sense.
Like single dad stuff. And then like Harley Quinn shows up and she like smashes everything. And he's just like, come on, like lady, like I'm trying to raise a kid here.
Yeah. What are you doing? What are you doing? Smashing everything.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay. I'm glad I got it.
So, more volumes are coming out too. So I'm really, that's definitely going to be on the read list. Okay. So we got Hospice. One damn good thing. So did you see this on Kickstarter?
Yeah, there's a lot of Hospice books, right? There's different ones.
So this was a thing that a bunch of creators we know did.
Yeah.
That is one shared universe, but they're each doing their own like one shot inside of it. Mm-hmm. And it revolves around this hospice home. And that's basically it. And we find out in this issue that the hospice home is a place for like people who had done bad things go there to die. But when they die, there's actually like demonic entities inside of them that are released.
Oh.
And the hospice home is like sheltering them.
Interesting.
And this one's all about this guy who finds out that he has these demons inside of him and doesn't want them. Like he's done bad things, but he doesn't consider himself a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes back and he tries to like, in his last couple days, he gives the money he stole to his daughter and then does all this stuff and decides he's just going to go kill himself and basically does it in the most brutal way possible to ensure that there's no body left for the demons to take over.
Mm.
So the first of like, I backed all four or five of them. This is the first one. This is Russell Nolte that did this one.
Okay.
And it was pretty good.
Cool.
All in all. So we'll see. Out of the group, there was one person I had never heard of before, and I can't remember her name. And then Russell was the one I would be least likely to read a book by. So for him to be the first impression of this, and I liked it, bodes well for the rest of them.
Cool.
And then Clash of the Cryptids.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
This is all about this like island where all the cryptids live.
Mm-hmm.
And people go there on this like tournament to try to subdue them. And it's basically like a hunting tournament,
yeah,
kind of thing. And basically like the lead character, it's an easy premise where his kid's sick, the medical bills are really high, so he's offered to go to this place, do it, and it'll pay for his kid's medical bills. So he decides to go and do it. And the person that's doing it is in charge of some pharmaceutical company that wants the cryptid because he believes that they could lead to like some sort of medicine that will help people. But when they get there, they find out that not only are they not allowed to kill them, they can only subdue them, but the cryptids are really fucking brutal. So the issue ends with them finding a bunch of the other people like hanging and bloody and all this.
Nice. It's like Predator.
Yes. That's awesome. Actually, that is a great comparison. It's a really good book. I don't even think you need to be like a cryptid guy. Like, obviously, that's what pulled me in.
Right.
But I just think if you like action or like kind of somewhat horror vibes,
cool,
this is a book you'd really like. So
sounds great.
I'll keep everybody, I'll let everybody know when issue two hits Kickstarter because I really liked it.
Nice.
And then, did I read anything digitally? Batman's, oh, Big Game number 4 came out.
Oh, yeah.
Mike, why aren't you reading this book?
I know. It's on my list. Every time an issue comes out, I add it to the list. I'm going to read them all in like one sitting.
So remember last issue when we found out that like Kick-Ass was going to come and he was like, because Joe Biden told him to?
Yeah, right.
Which I still find hilarious. So we find out that all the heroes got that message and it was a fake message. It was a deep fake from the villains.
Of course it was.
And they got him on this boat and then just killed them all.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
But because Kick-Ass was out there helping somebody who had her purse stolen, he never made it to the boat. So he's still out there somewhere. And then Hit Girl was sent back in time when she was trying to save the Chrononauts.
Mm-hmm.
And she found a way. So she found out there's this like civilization at the beginning of time on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And has an interaction with them. And when they find out that they're no longer in charge of the planet in the future, they decide they're going to use that time jump to go into the future and just take over. So the issue ends with all the heroes dead except for Kick-Ass and Hit Girl. The Magic Order is still around, but they're still going, ain't my fucking problem.
Yeah, we're too strong for this.
Nemesis is still around because he's really good at killing heroes. The Wanted folk are still around because they're the big bad that's doing all this. And this like futuristic civilization from the past just time jumps into the future and just like, this is our planet now.
Crazy.
And issue 5 is the last issue. So like,
we'll see how it plays out.
Dude, this fucking book is crazy.
Yeah, it's wild.
And I love that like Millar is just like, we're wiping the slate clean on keeping these characters and nothing else. And like all these books I've been working on for years were fucking meaningless.
Yeah, nothing. They're getting wiped clean. We're starting over.
I love it.
That's awesome.
So Mike, that was everything I read the past 2 weeks.
Nice.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter. And if you want to follow some more shenanigans of mine, you can go to chriscomicscorner.substack.com. And if you want to follow the show, you can go to @FortressComics_ on Twitter and also at FortressComicNews.com. Remember, everybody, to like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version, to give the 5-star reviews and podcatchers, and to go ahead and visit patreon.com/FortressComics for more. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. And I will see you all here Friday with my interview with Charlie Stickney, but we will see you all here next week.